This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Milton. The Canadian government on Thursday unveiled a $1.2 billion plan to help the country deal with the looming dangers of a warming world, such as floods, wildfires, and extreme heat. Officials said the so-called climate adaptation strategy will fund programs to help Canadians shield themselves from heat waves, protect coastlines from rising seas, and safeguard infrastructure. The plan includes provisions for the far north, which is facing the thaw of permafrost. The plan was unveiled as Prince Edward Island on the Canada's eastern coast recovers from Hurricane Fiona in September. The storm was said to be the costliest ever to hit Canada's Atlantic coast. U.S. President Joe Biden says he'll try to push Congress to enact more gun control measures after a spate of mass shootings in the country in recent weeks. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more.
Six people killed in a Southeast Virginia Walmart, five dead in Colorado Springs in just a week. And President Biden says more must be done to prevent these killings from taking place.
The idea we still allow semi-automatic weapons to be purchased is sick.
He tells reporters he'll take it to Congress, even though the session's almost over. Meanwhile, the president reached out to the owners of Club Q in Colorado Springs, offering support and condolences. While a worker at the Virginia Walmart, whose life was spared, says she doesn't think the victims were randomly chosen.
He was going hunting. He was picking people out.
Jesse Wilcheski, on the job just 5 days, says the gunman aimed at her and then told her to run. I'm Jackie Quinn.
You can keep up on that story at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Recent uptake of COVID-19 vaccine booster doses in the European Union has been rather disappointing, according to an official on Thursday, amid concerns that protection against severe cases of the disease could weaken during the winter. The European average rate of revaccination or receiving booster doses was only 29%, and the groups of people considered to be at highest risk, such as the elderly and the immunocompromised. European Union energy ministers have met at an emergency meeting on gas prices. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
As winter approaches, EU nations have not been able to agree on the question of gas prices, which are expected to skyrocket. The soaring prices are a result of Russia's war in Ukraine, with Moscow slashing gas supplies to all the European nations critical of Russia's actions. The meeting was focused on trying to break a deadlock between countries like Greece, Spain and France who want a cap on prices to ease household bills, and those like Germany and Netherlands that are insisting a price cap could cut supplies. Estonia's Minister of Economic Affairs, Riina Sikkut, believes a price cap is necessary, but it is a tricky balance.
The security of supply is paramount. If the price is too high, we can compensate, we need to compensate, but we cannot threaten the security of supply.
I'm Karen Chamas.
Russian lawmakers on Thursday gave their final approval to a bill that significantly expands restrictions on activities seen as promoting gay rights in the country, another step in a years-long crackdown on the country's embattled LGBTQ community. And in the United States, some Ford SUVs are being recalled. AP correspondent Rita Foley has more.
Ford is recalling thousands of SUVs because a cracked fuel injector can spill fuel or leak vapors onto a hot engine and cause fires. The recall covers Bronco Sport and Escape SUVs from model years 2020 through 2023. Ford says it's not recommending that the owners stop driving the vehicles or park them outdoors because fires are rare, says Ford, and generally don't happen when the engines are off. But Ford does say that it's gotten 20 reports of fires, including three that ignited nearby structures. I'm Rita Foley.
Avian flu has wiped out more than 50 million birds in the United States this year, making it the country's deadliest outbreak in history. This according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The deaths of chickens, turkeys, and other birds represent the worst U.S. animal health disaster to date. That tops the previous record of just over 50 million birds that died in an outbreak in 2015. I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. is Friday, November 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the EU presses ahead with more sanctions as Russia's strike causes major water and power outages in Kyiv.
We will not rest until Ukraine has prevailed over Putin and his unlawful and barbaric war. The Ukrainian people must face this oncoming winter with no electricity.
Malaysia swearing a new prime minister.
Anwar has been a deputy prime minister, a protest leader and an opposition leader, and spent a decade in prison on sodomy charges he said were cooked up to thwart his career.
And African countries continue their poor run at the Qatar World Cup. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen said during a visit to Finland on Thursday that European Union is pressing ahead with a ninth sanctions package on Russia in response to Moscow's attack on Ukraine. The EU last month gave final approval to its eighth batch of sanctions over the invasion, including more restrictions on trade in steel and technology products.
We are working hard to hit Russia where it hurts, to blunt even further its capacity to wage war on Ukraine. And I can announce today that we are working full speed on a ninth sanctions package. And I'm confident that we will very soon approve a global price cap on Russian oil with the G7 and other major partners. We will not rest until Ukraine has prevailed over Putin and his unlawful and barbaric war. The Ukrainian people, because of Putin's barbaric terroristic attack on the country's civil infrastructure, must face this oncoming winter with no electricity and in many places no running water. Because of him, babies, their parents and grandparents are freezing in the dark. And I strongly condemn these barbaric attacks. They are war crimes. But I also know that our Ukrainian friends will overcome this tragedy because they are strong and their cause is just. And we, the European Union, stand here by them in these very difficult times as long as it takes.
That's European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen. Russia missiles knocked out electricity in the Kyiv region and elsewhere across the country, killing at least six people during attacks that caused widespread blackouts. Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters reports.
Russian missiles rained down on Ukraine Wednesday, knocking out electricity in the Kyiv region and elsewhere across the country. At least six people were killed during attacks that targeted energy facilities, cutting power in many regions and forcing emergency blackouts elsewhere, as Moscow pushed a campaign to plunge Ukrainian cities into darkness and cold with winter setting in. Emergency crews rushed patients into a Kyiv hospital Wednesday after the strikes, though power to the hospital was also cut, forcing staff to use generators and stored water. The lack of power forced the shutdown of nuclear reactors in Ukraine's south and west, all in government-held territory, according to the state-run nuclear energy firm. Ukraine's largest nuclear complex at Zaporizhia, near the front lines in the south, is Russian-controlled and was previously switched off because of shelling that both sides blame on each other. A maternity hospital in the region was destroyed by shelling Wednesday. Officials said a doctor and a patient were pulled from the debris, but a two-day-old baby was killed. The child's grandmother looked on as rescue workers sifted through the rubble. Ukraine's top military commander said air defenses shot down 51 of 67 Russian cruise missiles launched on Wednesday, including 20 of the 30 that targeted Kyiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the attacks targeted infrastructure, energy, and regular civilians.
The result is tragic. There is a big number of wounded. There are killed ones. Please accept my condolences, all who lost relatives and close ones. Concerning electricity and water supply, everyone is working. Electricians are working. Rescue servicemen are working. Everyone is working. Local authorities, the task is set. We will rebuild everything. We will get through it all because we are an unbreakable people.
Since October, Russia has openly acknowledged targeting Ukraine's civil power and heating systems with long-range missiles and drones. Moscow says the aim is to reduce Kyiv's ability to fight and push it to negotiate. Ukraine says the strikes on infrastructure are war crimes. Russia denies its troops deliberately attack civilians or have committed atrocities.
That's Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters. Turkish president says his nation's military will begin a land operation against Kurdish militants in northern Syria, quote, at the most convenient time, unquote. Kurdish separatists have been fighting a decades-long insurgency. There have been global calls for restraint, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Cheered on by his party lawmakers Wednesday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan vowed to escalate the military offensive in Syria.
While we press ahead with air raids uninterrupted, we'll crack down on terrorists also by land at the most convenient time for us.
Turkey blames PKK, Kurdish terrorists, for a November 13th bomb attack in Istanbul that killed 8 people. Kurdish groups deny responsibility. In response, Turkey carried out air raids on Kurdish positions in Syria and northern Iraq, which Ankara claims killed 184 militants. Kurdish groups say only civilians were killed and said Turkey was conducting a genocidal war. Rockets were fired Tuesday from Syria across the border into Turkey, killing at least 3 people. The escalation threatens to ignite a febrile region, contested by global and regional powers and their allied militias amid the fallout of the Syrian civil war. Turkish forces entered northern Syria in 2016 in Operation Euphrates Shield, targeting Islamic State and, more recently, Kurdish militants. Turkey and its allied Syrian militias now control large areas along the border. Meanwhile, Russia continues to support rival Syrian government forces. But Ankara sees an opportunity to expand its operations, says analyst Ali Bilgic.
Russian influence in Syria because of the war in Ukraine has significantly declined recently, and Turkey, in my opinion, has been searching for an opportunity to change the status quo in Syria in favor of Turkish political interests.
The Turkish president may also see domestic political benefits.
Turkey will be able to send more Syrian refugees back to Syria, and it will be important political success for the Erdogan government in consideration of the forthcoming elections in June 2023.
Turkey's threat of a renewed offensive poses a challenge for NATO ally, the United States. Washington supported Kurdish YPG forces in the fight against Islamic State. The US still has around 900 troops in northern Syria. In a statement to VOA, the Pentagon urged restraint, saying these actions threaten our shared goals, including to continue the fight against ISIS. Russia has also called for de-escalation. But Turkey sees itself in a strong geopolitical position, argues Bilgic.
It can talk to Russia. And for Russia, Turkey is one of the countries through which it can break its international and diplomatic isolation. And United States needs Turkey because pretty much Turkish forces are the only NATO forces in Syria against the Russia-supported Assad regime.
Adding to the growing regional tensions, Iran also launched drone and missile attacks on Iranian Kurdish groups in northern Iraq. The United Nations has urged all parties to abide by international law. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thank you, Henry. Anwar Ibrahim has been sworn in as Malaysia's prime minister after a three-decade wait that included years in opposition and in prison. But his appointment could usher in more instability. Lucy Field of Reuters reports.
Malaysia's Anwar Ibrahim was sworn in as prime minister on Thursday, capping a three-decade-long political journey.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Anwar has been a deputy prime minister, a protest leader and an opposition leader, and spent a decade in prison on sodomy charges he said were cooked up to thwart his career. Anwar's supporters gathered outside his house in Kuala Lumpur, praying and hugging one another. His appointment ends 5 days of unprecedented post-election deadlock, and markets surged on the news. But it could usher in a new instability. Anwar's rival, former Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin, has challenged him to prove his majority in parliament. Both men failed to win a majority in Saturday's election, which was close and pitted Anwar's progressive coalition against Muhyiddin's mostly conservative ethnic Malay Muslim alliance. King As-Sultan Abdullah appointed Anwar after speaking to several lawmakers. Local resident Farsha Doshi hoped the country could now move on.
And I think the focus now should be the people of this country, not politicians with their egos, but work towards reviving this country. That's all I'm asking for.
Anwar takes on a slowing economy and a divided country. Malaysia has had three prime ministers in as many years. His supporters hope his government will prevent a return to historic tension between the ethnic Malay Muslim majority and ethnic Chinese and Indian minorities. 75-year-old Anwar has time and again been denied the premiership. He started out as a protege of veteran leader Mahathir Mohamad. He was deputy prime minister in the 1990s and in 2018, the official prime minister in waiting.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. South African police say 10,000 new officers will be on the streets by Christmas after a jump in violent crime, with murders up 14%, carjackings up 24%, and kidnappings doubling. Police say 7,000 people, almost 1,000 of them women, were murdered between July and September, and 10,000 women were raped in those 3 months. The disturbing trend comes just ahead of Friday's 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
The crime figures from July to September were announced by the Minister of Police, Becky Cele.
The crime figures show that aggression and violence are at worrying levels in South Africa.
Cele has promised citizens that the 10,000 additional officers will make a difference during the Christmas holiday period and beyond. But crime analyst at the Institute for Security Studies, Gareth Newman, is sceptical. He says the crime stats show that the upward trend in murders that started over a decade ago has continued and increased, and the rate of increase has worsened. He says government's crime-fighting efforts are failing.
They simply are not able to utilize the vast resources of the state. We're talking about a large criminal justice budget, around 140 to 150 billion rand annually. Police organization with almost 180,000 personnel simply aren't able to utilize the resources effectively in a manner that brings perpetrators to justice.
For example, Newman says from 2012 until last year, the ability of the South African Police Service to solve murders has dropped by 50%. He has urged the President and the Minister of Police to take note of the reports from at least five government-sponsored commissions of inquiry or panels of experts looking into policing over the last 10 years and to make the necessary changes.
We need a completely new rethink, starting with the rejuvenation of the top management echelon of the South African Police Service, because that is where the problem starts. That management structure is at war with itself.
The founder of the non-governmental organization 1,000 Women, One Voice, Tina Tiat, agrees that there's much room for improvement in the criminal justice system. She and her team are getting ready to participate in the annual 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, which starts Friday. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
In other news, Ghana coach Ato Addo has criticized the American referee who awarded a penalty that resulted in Cristiano Ronaldo's record goal at the World Cup. Addo called it, quote, a special gift from the referee, unquote. Ronaldo won and converted the second-half penalty that made him the first male player to score in five World Cups. Portugal went on to beat Ghana 3-2. In other results, Brazil beat Serbia 2-0, Switzerland defeated Cameroon 1-0, while Uruguay and South Korea settled for a goalless draw. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Malawi is in the grip of its worst cholera outbreak in more than a decade, just as the world suffers a global vaccine shortage and as the country heads into rainy season when the disease is likely to spread quickly. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
At a health center in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre, a nurse is checking the IV drip on a patient. One victim of the country's worst cholera outbreak in more than a decade. For the patient's mother, Alida Piri, it is her second time in this ward.
She's not the only one. Her younger sister was also right here in this very room a couple of days ago. I can testify that cholera is a serious disease and we need to take precautions.
Malawi's healthcare system has identified a few health centres to focus on cholera treatment. Patients have been arriving in droves, and healthcare workers like Eunice Msalemu say they are struggling.
When you know what to do, but then you don't have this, you don't have enough equipment, and you don't have the supplies and the resources that you need to conduct or to deliver your work, then that comes a challenge and a drawback for you to deliver.
Complicating matters further is a lack of vaccines amid a global shortage. In October, the World Health Organization declared that they would follow a single-dose strategy. That's despite the fact that the cholera vaccine needs two doses to be most effective. At One Blantyre Health Center, clinician Pilarani Wanja is showing residents how to self-administer an oral cholera vaccine. She says that out of the 32 cholera cases they've received, none were vaccinated.
So it means that for those that received, they are fine. So it means if more people get the vaccine, I think we can reduce the cases.
Malawi still needs to roll out its second phase of cholera vaccines after taking a delivery of 2.9 million doses from the Global Alliance of Vaccines, Gavi, through the WHO. With the rainy season now arriving, the fear is that the outbreak is only going to get worse.
That's David Doyle of Reuters, and China reported record-high COVID-19 infections on Thursday, with cities nationwide imposing localized lockdowns, mass testing and other curbs that are fueling frustration and darkening the outlook for the world's second-largest economy. Rachel Graham of Reuters reports.
China reported a record number of COVID-19 infections on Thursday, 31,444 new local cases on Wednesday, breaking the previous high set on April 13th, when commercial hub Shanghai was in a lockdown that would last 2 months. Now cities nationwide are imposing localized lockdowns, mass testing and other curbs that are darkening the outlook for the world's second largest economy. The streets of Chaoyang, the capital's most populous district, have been increasingly empty this week. Sanlitun, a high-end shopping area, was nearly silent on Thursday, but for the wearing of the e-bikes of delivery riders ferrying meals for those working from home. The surge in infections is diminishing investors' hopes that China will soon ease the rigid zero-COVID policy that, alongside a downturn in the property market, is battering the economy. It's been nearly 3 years since the pandemic emerged in the central city of Wuhan. The restrictions have also exacted a toll on China's increasingly frustrated residents. While official infection tallies are low by global standards, China tries to stamp out every infection chain, making it a global outlier. China's leadership has stuck by its zero COVID policy, which includes some of the strictest restrictions in the world, saying it is necessary to save lives and prevent the medical system from being overwhelmed. Factory output has taken a hit from the measures, including the world's biggest iPhone plant, which has been rocked by violent clashes between workers and security personnel in a rare show of dissent. Acknowledging the pressure on the economy, the cabinet said China would use timely cuts in bank cash reserves and other monetary policy tools to make sure there is enough liquidity, state media reported on Wednesday.
That's Rachel Graham of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
Several studies and findings made by spacecraft, rovers, and landers from NASA and other space agencies suggest that some 4.5 billion years ago, Mars had a thick, rich atmosphere and oceans of flowing water on its surface, which could have possibly supported life. A new study published in the journal Science Advances proposes that early in its evolution, the red planet was covered with water with an average depth of 300 meters. The study led by researchers at the University of Copenhagen suggests all of that water came from ice-filled asteroids, which showered the planet for its first 100 million years. Study authors also found that the asteroids brought important biological molecules like amino acids to Mars. Amino acids are one of the important building blocks that make life possible. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is visiting a Western Philippines island province at the edge of the South China Sea to amplify America's support and underline U.S. interest in freedom of navigation in the disputed waters. We'll discuss this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
A popular tech concept being spread on the internet and in mass media is something called the metaverse. While many people are talking about it, not many of us really know what it is. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Matthew Canterman of Ball Metaverse Research Partners joins me on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA to talk about what many in the tech industry are calling the next phase of the internet's evolution. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out VOA Africa for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedofa in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early November, North Korea, formerly known as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, launched another barrage of missiles, including a surface-to-air missile that landed a mere 57 kilometers from South Korea, formerly known as the Republic of Korea, or ROK. Another of the missiles launched in early November was an intercontinental ballistic missile the DPRK claims is capable of carrying a nuclear warhead. Pyongyang announced that the launches were practice for a quote-unquote merciless attack on ROK and U.S. targets. Speaking at a United Nations Security Council briefing on the DPRK's missile firings, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, condemned in the strongest possible terms all recent DPRK missile launches since October 27. She noted that the latest test of an intercontinental ballistic missile is particularly concerning. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield declared that the DPRK's aggressive behavior is more than just advancing the DPRK's unlawful military capabilities and undermining the global nonproliferation regime. This is also about the DPRK trying to purposely raise tensions and stoke fear in its neighbors. In response to the DPRK's aggressive behavior over the past several months, the United States and the ROK have further deepened their cooperation to bolster their shared security. In July, the United States deployed fifth-generation fighter aircraft to the ROK, and in October, the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group redeployed to the Sea of Japan after Pyongyang launched a long-range ballistic missile over Japan. The day after the DPRK's early November missile barrage, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin and ROK Defense Minister Lee Jong-sup met at the Pentagon for the previously scheduled 54th U.S. Republic of Korea Security Consultative Meeting. The U.S. commitment to defending the ROK is ironclad, said Defense Secretary Austin after the meeting. On the peninsula, he noted, we're returning to large-scale exercises to strengthen our combined readiness and our ability to fight tonight, if necessary. We're committed to building on these efforts to strengthen integrated deterrence and to ensure that this alliance continues to bolster security and stability on the Korean Peninsula and throughout the Indo-Pacific. We will confront the challenges of the future the same way that we have for nearly 70 years, Secretary Austin declared, by standing shoulder to shoulder as proud allies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.